off last week, we were discussing Rav Sajagon's Sefer Emunos Videos, that we were becoming familiar with a little bit. And as part of our discussion, we noted that Rav Sajagon points to 8 reasons of why a person is led to kfira, what causes a person to become a kofer, an apikores. And one of those that he said, one of the causes is taiva, he says. So in this context, we discussed the very famous piece in Kovetz Mamarim of Rav Elchanan Wasserman, where he asks some very fundamental questions about the nature of emunah. How it is that we can ask a 13-year-old boy to have emunah, something that Aristotle himself struggled with. How there could be a mitzvah of kfira, a mitzvah of emunah. And a third point that he brought up was also how Chazal darshan lo sasuru acharei levavchem to be minus. If anything, minus, kfira is connected to the mind. It's not connected to the heart. Why is it that we find so many times a connection between intellect and heart? Ola alibi means I thought of an idea. Why the lave? Why the heart? So Rav Elchanan, we said, actually discussing, quoting from Chobos Alevavos, which Bezus Hashem will get to tonight. So Rav Elchanan works with the premise that emunah is something that a person would see in the world. Unbiased eyes would see a creator. Unbiased eyes would look at a world, such complexity, and would immediately assume that there was a creator. Whether this means Judaism or not Judaism is another discussion. But that something created the world, and then the logical assumption that if he created the world, there must be a purpose to the world, and I must have some responsibility in the world. So all of that, Rav Elchanan says, is something that the unbiased eye would see. However, why then did so many people struggle with this and do struggle with this? And he says that this is because of the idea of shochad, of being bribed. That even if one litigant gives a penny, 2 pennies, to the biggest tzaddik in the world, that tzaddik is pasul yedus, not because of a low plug, but because it's the nature of man that when somebody does something for you, even if they only give you 2 pennies, that you are blinded to the complete truth. You know what it's like? I always think about where one of the lawyers, it's a great strategy if you're going to be a lawyer. One lawyer in court stands up and he says some ridiculously crazy thing and the judge says, oh, no, I'm sorry, that's, you know, objection, Your Honor. Sustained? Which is the one where he agrees. Sustained. Okay, jury, ignore what he just said. Okay, but they heard it. It's a great move by a lawyer because the mice of the jury heard it. I know somebody who, when he used to wrestle, he used to walk right up to the wrestling match. He would walk right over, he would look at the other guy in the eye, and slap the guy in the face. And the judge would come over and give him a penalty. But the other person was so jittered, like this guy is crazy, that from then on in the match, he was already, it threw him off psychologically. So the guy lost a point or two, but it was worth it. It was worth it to be able to send a message to the opponent. So what Rav Elchanan argues is that when he comes into the analysis, we're not analyzing whether God exists when we come right out of the womb. By the time the person is 18, 19, and he has certain desires, certain pleasures that he seeks, a certain lifestyle that he might wants to live, so then all of the most intellectual honesty that he thinks he can muster will never bring him to decide to live a life that prevents him from doing the things that he wants to do. Especially when you throw in the ego aspect, that making a certain decision might mean that he has to accept things that he can't understand. Those two factors are so completely impossible for a person to overcome, or nearly impossible for a person to overcome. So Rav Elchanan says that this is the reason why so many people have trouble with emunah. Because having emunah, coming to that conclusion means that you have to live a certain type of lifestyle, and you have to curtail certain activity. And because that is such a hard decision to make, so people, for that reason, without even realizing it, they come to the conclusion that this is not emes. This is Rav Elchanan's theory, and he uses that to explain why, therefore, so many things are connected to the heart. Because what's preventing an apikores from accepting the emes of Torah is not an intellectual problem, but rather, what is it? It's a passion issue.
It's a heart issue. It's coming in with certain desires and wants that he wants to do and that he won't be able to accomplish. This is Rabbi Yochanan's famous idea in the very beginning of Kovetz Mamarim. And we use that to just conclude our discussion here, because that yesod, which Rabbi Yochanan explains over four or five pages, is really said in Rav Sajja Gaon in five words, when he says that a root of kfira is taiva. And that is what Rav Sajja Gaon means. Now, to conclude our discussion of doubt, obviously, I hope it's clear, this was not an attempt over the past 2 weeks to go through, we could spend an entire year discussing just the issue of Amunah. And none of the arguments that I'm suggesting tonight are the arguments that a person's faith should be based on. I am not skilled enough or knowledgeable enough to be able to make the proper case for Amunah, Mu'ul, all the other arguments that can be made. I'm just trying to share with you a little bit of Rav Sajja Gaon's philosophy, certainly to open you up to some other writings. We saw Rav Simcha Zissel, we saw Rav Yochanan, we saw the Beis Elokim. But the point is to be familiar with the basic arguments, where they come from, and so that when we do pursue these things on our own, throughout our lifetime, because it's a lifetime of work, we'll have a little bit of a basis. The summation, I think, of what we're seeing in Rav Sajja Gaon is that Rav Sajja Gaon very much champions philosophic study. He actually says that that brings the ultimate joy, when a person truly understands Hashem. So that brings a tremendous amount of joy, and that Hashem gave us minds in order to try to understand things. I'm going to end, this very nice sefer, Sefer Michtam Eliyahu on Elul and Rosh Hashanah. It's collected from the writings of Rav Dessler. And Rav Dessler here says something which I think is just exactly what we just said. This is in his Ma'amari on Elul. Ma'amari on Elul. And he says here, Yesh shnei minei sfeikos. There are two types of sfeikos. Yesh safek sichli. There's an intellectual safek. Hainu sheyesh lefnei ha-seichel tzadim lekan ulekan. Intellectually, there really are two different sides. The ein yecholos bidei ha-seichel ha-tahur. And there is no ability for the pure seichel. What does he mean by pure seichel? Meaning not affected by taiva. The pure, unadulterated seichel can't be machriya one way. This, he says, is a safek haroi li kare b'shem safek. This is a real safek. However, yesh safek b'chiri. There are other types of sfeikos that are your own choice that you have this safek. Hainu, there's no real safek here intellectually. But since your intellect is biased because there are other things pulling it in another direction, right? Sometimes you'll be talking to a guy, and maybe he'll be discussing something about something he wants to do this Shabbos. He wants to go someplace for Shabbos, which you know is not really the best place for his Avodas Hashem. It's really not the best place for him. He has a friend that's taking him away from, you know, a friend who's a bad influence on him. And you know, because you're an outside observer, that this friend is not good for him. But he can't see that because he likes the friend, and he's had such a long relationship with the friend. So it's hard for him. He'll be talking to the person, and they'll say, no, but I know that he does this and he does that, but he really is a good guy, and we've had such a long, you know, past together. Or he wants to go, a million times, I'm discussing with someplace, someone wants to go someplace for Shabbos, and I'll say, you know, I know that it's like such and such Shabbos and it's like a big deal to go to such and such location, but I'm telling you, like, there are a lot of things that go on there that really are not good for you, and I know you think it's like this big spiritual Shabbos, but you can go on other Shabbos if you're really going for the spiritual location. There's so many things there that can pull you away. It's not worth it. And he starts saying, no, but it's Kedusha Samakom, and I already set up that I'm going to walk this way, so I'm not going to bang into anyone I shouldn't be banging into. He's got all the answers in the world. Now, trust me, everyone's looking around like, what is he referring to? Anyway, if you were giving this person advice, or if he was giving that advice to somebody else, he would also be trying to convince them not to go, because he would also know it's not good for that person. But because it's him, and because it's me, I can't see that. I'm blinded. We've all had that experience. You're speaking to a friend, and it's like, man, this guy is blinded. And he is blinded, because that's what happens. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan was talking about. That's what Rabbi Sajid was talking about. That's what Rav Dessler here says is a seichel b'chiri. It's not a real suffix. It's a real suffix for you. But in a complete abstract intellectual, on an intellectual plane, that's not a real suffix. And what he says is it's a tremendous avoda to be able to distinguish what a real suffix is and what a suffix b'chiri is. And I wanted to end with this piece here in Rav Yochanan, in Michtav Eliyahu, because, as I keep saying, there's no problem with having doubt. Having doubt is a healthy sign that you're thinking.
But you have to always be honest with yourself. What kind of doubt is this? And sometimes you need to speak to someone else because they are able to look at the situation from a non-biased perspective. And you have to figure out, you have to be honest with yourself. If you really have a suffix, so great. So try to figure out, don't be scared of having a suffix. That's like Rav Sajid Gaon said, the only way you don't have doubt is when your mind is perfect. So until your mind is perfect, you're always going to have some doubts. And that's healthy. It's not a bad thing. Hashem wanted you to have doubt. He created your mind that it can think up other sides. But if your doubt is really coming because of a suffix b'chiri, so you have to at least be honest with yourself and say, wait a second, is this really a doubt? Or am I doing this because I'm biased? And it's very hard to have self-awareness and be honest with yourself, but that's such an important stage. I know I have a friend who started working in Eshat Torah, and he was trying to get advice from one of the senior Rebbeim in Eshat Torah. And I was there, and the senior Rebbe in Eshat Torah, who deals with thousands and thousands of Balei Tshuva, and we're not talking about Stam Balei Tshuva. We're talking about very well-educated Balei Tshuva. Harvard, Yale, Princeton, went to all the top universities, and they come to Israel, and they come to Eshat Torah. Obviously, not everyone who comes to Eshat Torah went to an Ivy League school, but a tremendous amount of, a lot of brain power that he's been dealing with, and he's been discussing. And he said, and I'll never forget it, he said, I want you to know, almost every single boy that I speak with who comes to me with intellectual questions, the conversation begins with, Rabbi, I have major intellectual problems with Judaism. He said that in 98% of the cases, without exaggeration, by the time they're done with the conversation, there's either a girlfriend or money, a non-Jewish girlfriend, some type of money issue, some type of other issue that's going on behind the scenes that's standing behind the intellectual issues. He said that he can count on his hand over the 15, 20 years that he's been working with Eshat Torah, he can count on his hand, one hand, how many boys really had an intellectual issue. I was just talking with someone tonight that I remember also once discussing with someone some issues, and we talked for an hour, 2 hours, back and forth about proofs and questions, and we were discussing, and finally after a while when I had pointed out some weaknesses in his argument, he said, you know what, Aryeh, you're right. I just don't care. Okay? You're right. It's not. I don't really have any questions. I really just don't care right now. I like my life, and I'm really not interested in changing the way I live. And I'm not interested in adding all of these things into my life, all of these restrictions. You know what? I just don't care. So let's forget. This is getting annoying that we're talking about all this intellectual stuff. Even though he had started with all of these intellectual questions, he had questions about fossil records and about light years, and it was all these big, big, highfalutin discussions. You know, it can't be because of the carbon dating, and it can't be because of this, and it can't be because of that. And every single time I said, well, have you read articles recently about carbon dating? And I said, I'm not saying that carbon dating is wrong. I'm not saying that the fossil records are wrong. I'm just saying, like, you got to approach it intellectually. You can't just read, you know, an article in some Reader's Digest about evolution and then think you're like an evolution scholar and you can make arguments based on evolution and shock an entire religion for thousands of years because you read a Reader's Digest article. You want to really spend time, so take physics, start doing real research, read both sides, and do some real research. Take it seriously, but be honest with yourself. Until the doubt is a real doubt, so you have to know what it is. I heard once a very, very beautiful thing. Rav Volbi said, and I think this is very nice for the whole, as I told you, as we move beyond the Rishonim, we're going to move out of this type of discussion. Those of you who enjoyed it, sorry, and those of you who didn't, so we're going to move on to new material eventually. This type of straight philosophic discussion, which Rav Sajid Gaon and the early Rishonim are a lot about this. But what I think is so important is the realization that there are no, and this is what I heard with Shem Rav Volbi, there are no kfira questions. There are kfira answers. But there are no kfira questions. There are no questions that are not allowed. There are other religions that don't allow questions. Our entire Gemara is about questioning the halacha. Forget philosophic questions. Every single halacha you throw at him, really, where do you know? How do you know? Maybe what about this? Maybe about that? We are all about asking questions. And you should realize that that is a very healthy thing. Okay. We're now going to move on to the